You're listening to Industry Iowa, presented by CIRIS, the Center for Industrial Research and Service. Here's your host, Stephen Wilson.
Well, welcome to Industry Iowa. My name is Stephen C. Wilson, and with us today, we've got Bill Schmarzo. And Bill is going to be a guest at the Ivy College of Business and the Innovation Sales Summit. That's coming up April 7th. And that's going to be held at the Iowa State University campus in the Memorial Union. And the title of that session, or the title of the conference itself, or the one day, is Powered by AI, Driven by People. And Bill, I've recently come to know just through, again, through the summit, and he's going to be speaking. And Bill, tell us what it is that you do. And again, I got to speak to it. I love those of you that are listening on the radio or listening on Spotify, wherever you might be. He's got a license plate up there, Dean OBD. And I asked him, what does it mean? You got to tell us, okay, and then go from there, Bill.
Well, it actually plays well because Stephen, I view myself and I always have in my 40 some years in this industry. Yeah, I've been doing this data analytics stuff since really the early 1980s. I started when I was 10, right? So I've always been in the how do we leverage data to make more thoughtful decisions? And so the whole data science thing has sort of exploded when I was the vice president of advertiser analytics at Yahoo. And the very first data science summit event was held in Santa Clara. And I got this frantic phone call from some of the organizers, and they said, do you mind coming and talking to us about the business value of this conversation? Now, data science was all hot. Hadoop would come out. Machine learning had jumped to a next level of excellence. And we at Yahoo were really mastering a lot of the advanced analytics capabilities. And they said, can you come and talk to us about, you know, this business aspect? I mean, we got a lot of people to talk about the technology and the tools and the algorithms. And I said, okay, certainly. So I created a session I called the Big Data MBA, which, by the way, ended up being the name of my second book. And in that, I went through a process about talking to them about how do organizations define value. Did all Michael Porter and Drucker sort of conversations, and mm-hmm. really took them through that the data is interesting, but you have to frame it around the constraints of how organizations create value, right? And blah, blah, blah. So session got done. It was all a bunch of nerds, and they all were like, oh, wow, that's so cool. And so I was interviewed afterward, and they explained, well, sort of, we went to your session, you know, you're kind of like the dean of big data and how you teach. And the name stuck, like dean of big data. This became, so if you do a search, if you want to know anything at all about me, pick up any Gen AI tool, ask it, who is Bill Schmarzo? What is the big dean? What does the dean of big data talk and lecture about? And why should I give a crap? And it'll give you everything it knows about me.
Why should I even care, right? Yeah.
Why should I even give up?
I'm really looking forward for being a part of that event. And so, in general, how would you overview the work that you do in general? What is it? Is what connecting what?
Okay. So I've been fortunate throughout my career that I've had many Forrest Gump moments, like my era at Yahoo, where I was, you know, the vice president of advertiser analytics, happened to be there when the whole data science Hadoop thing just had just exploded. And what we all have kind of superpowers. My superpower is the ability to blend a combination of data science, design thinking, and data economics into a framework so that organizations understand not only how do we derive and drive value from our data, but how do we also unleash the creative juices and that tribal knowledge that's buried inside the organization so that when I'm trying to define and measure value creation effectiveness, I'm talking to the people who actually do it. Right. So a lot of design thinking techniques. So that I teach at Iowa State. Obviously, I teach a class called AI Driven Innovation. We spend more time talking about design thinking than we do about data science, because the real secret to building AI models, for example, is understanding the deep causal insights buried in these domain experts, sales reps, for example, in their interaction with customers? And how does AI help to not only amplify that expertise, but how does it stimulate more creative thinking? How does it help you build simulations and counterfactuals and what-ifing so that I can become the best professional, whether I'm a teacher, a doctor, a sales rep, a social worker, a detective, I can become the best human professional that I can possibly be.
I love the fact, and you brought it up, and that was kind of leading into my next question there. When people hear AI in professional development, oftentimes they think, okay, yeah, automation. What can I automate so that I don't have to do some of these things? But you mentioned it. You talk about amplification. What's the big difference there?
Okay, so humans, all professionals go through three phases of professional development. They go from, my analogy is, I like Randy Johnson, the pitcher for, used to pitch back in the day, the big unit, right? And the first phase is around, you know, basic rookie, is around competence development, right? Developing basic competence, to be able to throw the ball, throw strikes, et cetera, et cetera. And then the second phase is really the mastery of your skill set. How to become the best that I can become? How do I go from being a rookie to an all-star? And the final phase, by the way, is elevation. How do I elevate my entire profession? And AI, by the way, can help in every one of those phases. AI can help us think through, how do we accelerate our personal development? How does it help us think more broadly about a problem? How does it help us spot biases and things you might have overlooked in that first phase? In the second phase, it really can help me understand cause and effect. It helped me do interventions. And so help, again, all designed to help the human accelerate their professional development, amplify their expertise, and by the way, in that third phase, that elevation phase, unleashing creativity, trying new techniques, new algorithms, becoming, you know, a bigger part of elevating the entire profession. I think about, you know, how I've got a good friend who's a nurse, and her time is in the elevation stage, and she's out help redefining new processes and training and elevating other organizations. And so to me, AI plays a role. There's 12 things that AI can do as you're trying to become the best, whatever you want to be. So to me, that's the thing, is that AI, if you think the real productivity from AI is automating humans out of work to improve productivity, you've already lost the game. This is not a productivity battle. This is an effectiveness and efficiency battle. How do I become the best sales rep? How do I get more with less? How do I focus to make sure that my skills are developed for the right kind of job I need to do in the way that is most valuable to my stakeholders, my customers, and my organization?
You spoke about mastery, and how can AI, right? And generally, you know, we've all heard it takes 10,000 hours to master and different things like that. How can AI shorten that learning curve for emerging professionals without short-circuiting that real mastery, or can it?
Oh, it certainly can. In fact, I think that first phase, by the way, the development phase, that competence phase, is all about how AI helps you in the struggles to understand, what am I doing? What do I do well? Really understanding you. So there's, but that second phase around mastery, which in this 10,000 hours is interesting, because maybe one of the secret sauces of AI is, how does it AI accelerate that, right? Well, we do, you know, for example, if we can identify cause and effect relationships, right? By the way, generative AI does not do that. Generative AI is a statistical averaging tool that looks for patterns, doesn't look for cause and effect. But if we go to the next step and really dive into cause and effect, these are the factors that drive these outcomes, then I can do things like interventions. I can say, well, what if I do this instead of that? I can do counterfactuals that after I made a decision, figure out, well, what didn't work and why didn't it work and how does that change my relationships? And so what AI can do is in that mastery phase to help you surface and understand and quantify the cause and effect between what factors really matter, what factors I can control, right? And what kind of impact and outcomes can I drive from that? That's where AI plays it. You can build simulations with AI. In one of my class, my class teaches vibe coding. Woohoo, we're so cool, right? And we build simulations that the students, like one of the simulations we build is that you're the store manager for a Chipotle store. And we've got a simulation has got customers coming in, and you can control the speed of customers. Oh, there's a local event nearby, speed goes up, and you're trying to balance 8 workers across a bunch of different workstations, right? How do you do that, right? How do you do, all of a sudden the more people, and we built the simulation, HTML-based simulation, vibe coding, which I did not write a single line of code. I used the GenAI tool, describe the challenge, describe the problem, describe the constraints, and it built me this thing. And of course, there were some modifications, but that helps the students understand that there are natural trade-offs here. Where are the inflection points in that trade-off process? Oh, and by the way, you can create a button on that simulation that says, what would AI do? So after you played with it, you say, okay, I think I got the right answer, hit AI, and AI says, well, these are the things that I would have done and such. So simulations can accelerate that learning process in a fail-safe environment. And AI is marvelous because of causal AI that I can build these simulations that reflect real-world situations so I can get real-world learning, hopefully in less than 10,000 hours.
How do you see right now, or what would you say maybe, talking about, risks associated, what concerns you most about maybe how some professionals are currently approaching AI? Would you just see it as that almost like an advanced Google, or, what are you seeing?
So the biggest challenge with especially generative AI is that it's a statistical averaging tool. So it looks across all this vast amount of data, most of which has come from social media, which is dubious at best, right? And it's going to look for trends, patterns, relationships, and try to average across that to find patterns, which means that your questions you're asking it generically in a very native sense are even more influenced by the Kardashians and Taylor Swift comments, right? And so the key is you need to train this Gen AI tool to around the problem you're trying to solve and how I want to approach it. So in my class, the first day of class, we build Yoda, which is your own digital assistant. And the students walk into class, they pick a problem they're going to go after. So like last semester, one of the groups picked Mary Greeley's medical in Ames and how AI could help optimize the ER room operations. Right. And so you start training this Yoda. You find all the data you can find about Mary Greeley, find all the data you can find about, ER operations. You can find peer reviewed research, and you're starting to train this tool on the problem you're trying to go after. And my analogy is it's like this GenAI tool has access to 440 million books, and I only need 4. How do I help it find the books and articles that are most relevant to the problems I'm going after? And I do it by taking the problem space and shrinking it down to the problem space I care about most. And so so we teach that. We have a methodology called the Art of Thinking Like a Data Scientist, which is about harvesting domain knowledge from the stakeholders. So again, we're constantly training. And by the way, we load Yoda with a Socratic method. Gen AI is used to giving you answers, right? But you can't build a system that thinks well without also building one that questions well. And the Socratic method is not one of giving you answers. It asks you questions in return. So you ask it a question and it'll come back and say, have you thought about this? What's your rationale for that? What's your perspective for this? Right. And so we are training this tool. By the way, they were training the AI engineers go wild because it's not really training. It's a different technique. But for us, it's training it around the problem I'm trying to go after, what's important. By the way, we also upload the books of the Bible books of Matthew and Luke into our Yoda because we want it to think ethically and responsibly. When it makes decisions, we want to think about the golden rule and the parable of the Good Samaritan, right? All these sort of things.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. So who owns AI at an organization? Who owns it?
Oh, good question. The ethical and responsible use of AI has to come at the top. The CEO has to ultimately own and by the way, there are all kinds of new laws coming out. There's a recent ruling out of Delaware that C-suites and board of directors can be held personally financially liable for answers their AI models generate. And if they're biased and on, right? This is a big controversy. So with that in mind, the CEO and the board of directors has to own the responsible, meaningful, and ethical use of AI. But there also needs to be a grassroots training process, because the sources of value creation are found typically at the front lines of the organization, the front lines of customer engagement, and the front lines of operational execution. The people who understand how value is created isn't the C-suite. They're too far. They're way too abstracted away from that. It's the front line. So you want to understand what really drives an ER operations. How do I make it more effective? How do I drive more value? How do I serve more customers or patients more effectively? You talk to the nurses. You talk to the administrators. You talk to the doctors. You talk to, you know, the psychiatrists and the therapists. You talk to the people who do it. AI. So the secret to making AI work is to activate those people, so they understand how AI can not only help them be more effective, but how their feedback into AI makes certain that AI is delivering more relevant, meaningful, and responsible outcomes. So yes, owned by the CEO has to be, but it has to be pushed down so that it empowers people at the bottom. It's not a CYA initiative, right? Which is how people are looking at it. It's really, how do I amplify that human domain expertise that our organization has?
Some groups believe that still are holding to that it's an IT thing.
Failure. Yeah. I mean, that's guaranteed to fail. Guaranteed to fail. And you know what happens when people think it's an IT thing? They think it's a productivity discussion. And if they think it's a productivity discussion, they think productivity means removing humans out of the loop, right? So if it becomes IT, it becomes very process-centric. But if you're driven by the CEO, it should become human-centric. Now, I say that with quotes, because most organizations will tell you that their employees are their most important assets. But you and I know that's bullshit. Because the first time things start going south, what are the first thing they do?
Right.
They let people go, right?
Yeah.
And the danger with AI is the people you're letting go have deep tribal and domain knowledge, and they're walking out the door. Those are the people that AI can amplify to not only help them become more effective and efficient, but also help them to release that creativity to identify new sources of customer, operational, and society value. So the very people who can save your company, because you're focused on productivity, you push out the door. But if you're focused on effectiveness and efficiency and creativity, innovation, those are the people you amplify.
You're going to be speaking April 7th. High level overview. What are you going to bring? I know it's an innovation sales summit. What's going to be the North Star of your presentation?
So I'm going to make the companies there feel very uncomfortable about how they thought about how they approach sales and how AI re-engineers the process. Now, sales is probably going to be one of the biggest beneficiaries of a lot of I talk about, because sales understands rudimentarily and fundamentally that their most important assets are their salespeople, right? If I think about organizations that have really cracked this code, I think about professional sports teams or now college sports teams who really understand the value of an athlete, right? In professional sports, the value of your organization is tied nearly 100% to the value of your athletes. And so they become very masterful at using AI to amplify, accelerate development, amplify expertise. They've cracked the code. Sales organizations should understand that. So I'm going to talk to them about how you think differently about your salespeople as an asset, and how do I develop that asset? And by the way, how do I think differently about my customers? Because a lot of organizations today, they default to assigning sales reps to territories, right, and accounts by geography. That is probably the absolute worst thing they can do. But it's always been the way we've done things. Think about, if I knew what my customer really needed, where they were on their growth plan, what their risk concerns were, what their budget issues were, what their competitive situation, if I had detailed behavioral insight propensities of understanding about that customer, I could, and I had the same kind of insights about my sales rep, who's best at solutioning, who's best at communication, who has domain expertise, right? I could match the best salesperson with the best customer in order to drive the best outcomes, and put AI in the middle between that highly qualified sales rep and sales team and that customer to drive better outcomes for both organizations. It's the same model we are working with hospitals, right? And I have a patient comes in and they say, I've got a patient who's been diagnosed with cancer for the first time. She's an older person and, right, she has certain characteristics. She's, you know, she's very scared. She's risk averse. She may not be in great health, right? I have all these sort of behavioral and performance propensities. I know about that patient. Well, what's the right doctor to work with her? What's the right nurse to work with her? What are the right cancer treatments to give that person, given their thing, you know, that they've got? AI can help be that matchmaker. It says this person, these people, this treatment with this patient is the right match. And then basically AI, from a domain language model perspective, can stay in that conversation, understanding nuances, seeing that, you know, the conversation is going a certain way. It can help make recommendations to the caregivers, not replacing them, but saying, hey, you might want to look at this. Maybe this sort of treatment might be more effective. By the way, she seems to be reacting very negatively to this kind of treatment. We need, right? That's what AI can do. AI can help by better matching your revenue generators, value generators, and your customer stakeholders who define value to make sure you understand. So think about how you would reorganize your sales organization if you understand your customers at level of detail, where they are, what their maximum upside, and the sales reps, and found that right match. It's as simple as thinking about a baseball team, Stephen, right? I don't want my shortstop playing catcher. I don't want my right fielder pitching, right? I understand what people do best, and I put them in positions to be successful. That's what AI in the middle is all about. Understanding what they've got so I can put people in positions to maximize their probabilities of success.
So it doesn't diminish the individual's ability to, in the areas of preparation, delivery, customer empathy, doesn't diminish it, it enhances it.
In particular, the organization needs to spend time, and AI can help this, understanding, well, what's important in our sales reps? You know, what are the top 15 factors that we think are important for sales success? And by the way, AI can say, well, that's, you got 15, three of those are probably not there. You missed these two. And you can go through a process and say, well, given I sell this kind of a market, and here's my customer types, how do I prioritize which of those skills are most important? How do I weigh them? By the way, so it's about amplifying and elevating those individuals in a way that's important to your customers, because in the value creation process, this is something that I hope sales understands, that in the value creation process, the sales teams don't create value. The customers define value. So understanding how customers define and measure value is the first step in making sure as a sales organization that I have the right sales skills, the right salespeople, the right sales structure to help that customer realize their value so I can get my fair share of that value creation generation.
How will you, I'm sure that there will be sales professionals that there will not only be that, but they're, you know, individual contributors, but there will also be sales leaders. So how should sales leaders think differently about coaching, talent development, in this AI-enabled world?
By the way, that's the right perspective. How do I think about AI as an aid to help me develop my this arc, going from, you know, rookie to all-star to Hall of Famer Randy Johnson, right? How does it help me? That's the way to start thinking about it. Don't think about, well, I can get by with three less junior sales rep, and I can get rid of this really one expensive senior sales rep, because I can improve productivity. I can do more, right? The productivity measures aren't important, right? A baseball player doesn't improve their batting average by swinging the bat more, right? I always thought that you know, make more sales calls is such a, pardon, I'm gonna real blunt, make more sales calls is such a bullshit measure, right? It's not about making more sales calls. It's not about swinging the bat more. Think about how a good batter, think about how a Rod Carew or George Brett, right? They were very selective. They knew their zone. They waited for pitches they could really drive. We see this today with, well, Otani and other people, right? They know their space. And so identifying measures and metrics that matter, that's the first step in the process for sales management. Don't think about it being a productivity. Well, I can create, you know, call reports more quickly. It's not about doing things faster. It's about doing things more effectively. And that's step one. So Are you, as a sales organization, understanding the variables and metrics that are most valuable to your customers that your sales reps need to be able to exhibit? That is the challenge that I think sales management needs to start the conversation around. By the way, that's a good question. I'd never thought about it in that frame before, but that's exactly the right frame, right? What are the characteristics our customers value most? And by the way, there's a lot of characteristics that they're weighted differently. Some customers are in growth mode, and so they want somebody who has maybe domain expertise and expertise. Another organization's in trouble mode. They're trying to figure out how not to go under, and they want a sales rep that's got different skill sets, right? Understanding your customers and what's invaluable to them and the weights of those helps you to not only hire the right people, but more importantly, develop them through that three-phase journey to elevation.
Well, it resonated so much with me because I work in realms of continuous improvement and always talking about productivity and lean, right? People, I would oftentimes see lean as an acronym and just simply, you know, less employees are needed, which that's why I don't like to see it capitalized because then, yeah, right. Less employees are needed. Now, I understand what that means in one respect, but oftentimes what that led to was that means we can reduce our workforce rather than looking at it from the perspective of, hey, these individuals can now add value in a different way. And are we prepared to enable them to add value? We can look out to different markets and all that stuff. And it sounds like that's what you're saying is it broadens our ability to properly serve, to identify new customers and serve those customers, right?
Amen. Amen. Take sales reps, sales management. This is a hard step for them to really understand their customers' needs. Not just from a demographic, territorial, industry perspective, but where are they psychologically from a growth and development and maturation perspective? And to really dive into that, again, what's important to your customers? How do I develop those skill sets with my salespeople? And let AI be that matchmaker who's basically not only matchmaking, but is monitoring using language models to make certain that what's happening is going in the right direction. It can flag problems earlier. It can forecast when things aren't going to go the right direction and intervene, right? That's the power of causal AI in here, right? It can do these interventions and say, well, what if we did this? What if we moved? This systems engineer, by the way, is much better in these sort of situations. Let's flip them out, right? And by the way, this idea of cutting costs, you know, the Golden State Warriors basketball team could save a whole lot of money if they just got rid of Steph Curry. Now, they wouldn't win a game, right. But you know, they'd save a whole shitload of money.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Yes. You can reduce your costs out of until you're out of business. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So stepping away as we're closing up here, you're going to challenge them. You're going to challenge sales leaders to look at things differently. What's the maybe one or two messages that you're really hoping that of all the things that they hear, what's that thing that they can take away? And I know it's going to vary depending upon the individual, but if you had some things, some really strong things that you'd like them to walk away with.
Well, number one is the AI human edge. All right. AI is not here to replace humans. It's here to amplify your domain expertise, right? It's to grow that. So that's number one. The minute you think AI is a productivity tool like another spreadsheet, you've already lost the battle. Number two, think differently about how your customers realize and define value. Really dive into understanding what's important to those customers. Where are they in that value creation journeys? And the third thing is, on my professional development arc, how does AI help me accelerate the phase one competence development? How does it help me to amplify the mastery in phase two? And how does it help me unleash creativity in phase three? So those are the three things, right? AI is your friend, not your enemy. Don't think of it as a productivity tool. Think of it as a skill amplifier. Number two, you really need to think carefully about how your customers define value. We're going to talk about how Amazon, how Yahoo, how Google, Palantir, how these organizations have really dived down and understand their customers in depth. And number three, how do you use AI to accelerate and shrink that 10,000 hours rule, which I love, by the way.
There we go. All right. So this is all about the Ivy College of Business Innovation Sales Summit, again, being held April 7th from 9 until 3. at Iowa State University. I like to say the Iowa State University Memorial Union. And it's called Powered by AI, Driven by People. You can also go out to ivbusiness.iastate.edu where you can register. And, well, Bill, I'm hoping that, you know, you'll get ramped up and you'll bring a little bit of passion to the event, as there has been none here today. So I'm hoping that you bring a little passion with you. And closing comments.
Well, I would hope after the session's over, if people have questions, have doubts, have concerns, have challenges, find me. Find me and talk to me, right? I'm not an expert. I'm experienced, right? It's a big difference. There are no experts in this space. We're all learning as we go along. So if you have questions, engage with me, because that's how I learn. That's why I teach, right? I find that teaching is a way for me to learn what I don't know. So I'm not afraid to learn what I don't know. So find me. Let's chat afterwards.
If individuals want to reach out, learn a little bit more before then, how can they connect with you?
LinkedIn. Go to LinkedIn, Schmarzo. You'll find me. Connect with me. Send notes. Send comments. And I look forward to the event. And more importantly, I look forward to talking to people afterwards.
Excellent. All right. Thanks so much, Bill. We'll see you in April.
Thanks, Stephen.